Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Victory Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You know Perry Goldstein. You can find her, of course, on the Packs What She Said podcast at Perry _ Goldstein. And Perry and I are thrilled to welcome the one and only Wisco Grant. You can find him on Twitter at Wisco Grant. Grant Bills, Wisconsin or Wisco Sports Show, almost biffed it. And then producer for the Bill Michaels Show as well. Grant, the newest member of the Pack-A-Day podcast. Welcome to the team.
Thank you guys for having me. This is exciting. And I mess up the name of my show every other day. So it happens all the time. Andy, you've been on my show a couple times. You've been on with me and Bill countless times. So I kind of feel like I owe you. You've given so much to our network. So thank you for letting me come on.
It's going to be fun. Super excited about it. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And it's going to be a really fun season talking ball with both of you guys. Perry, welcome back, of course. How the heck are you doing?
I'm great. This is so fun because I love going on Grant's show too. So this is like two of my favorite people to talk Packers with.
Way better than Maggie Loney. Way better than, I'm just kidding.
I didn't say that. All right. let's hold our horses here.
I know. We've got a great show today. It is always fun to talk on a Victory Monday and talking about a Packers victory. The Packers get a 16-10 victory over the Indianapolis Colts in a pretty impressive performance all the way around, especially all things considered. No starting quarterback, Jordan Love. And they navigated this pretty beautifully. Grant, since you are the newest members of the team, I want to just start with key takeaways. I will let you go in any direction that you would like to go. What was your key takeaway from this one?
I'm glad you said any direction because I wanted to have like some X's and O's, like some football thing. I think as I sat after the game ended and we kind of all like Matt LaFleur exhaled to begin his presser. And I think we all kind of did the same thing, but like watch the pressers and saw Malik Willis talking with Pam Oliver. Like, I think my takeaway was just, it's a really cool story. Like games, baseball, football, it doesn't really matter. Like they can make you happy. They can make you sad. I think games can sometimes be funny. I'm a big baseball fan and occasionally baseball games just really funny. This game was just very enjoyable and a really cool story. And I don't know what it means for the next, you know, 15 games they have to play in their schedule, because I don't even know how long Malik Willis is going to play, but what a cool story for him to come from Tennessee, a place he was kind of in between regimes. And I don't know that that was going to be a supportive place of a developmental quarterback anyways, to end up here and in 3 weeks start and win a game in their home opener at Lambeau. That's really cool. And I know that's like t-shirt bumper sticker stuff, but that was my takeaway. It was a really cool story.
No, I love that a lot. I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about Malik Willis. Perry, how about you, your key takeaway from this game?
Well, I love the feel-good stuff, Grant. I mean, I agree. Like, you kind of go into this, and unfortunately for the backup quarterback, usually you're feeling a little down on him. Like, your confidence is not high, and, like, especially, I think, for a Malik Willis who just got into the building, you're feeling a little bit especially down because it's not as if he's been part of the team for long. And, you know, we might see him next week against his former team, and I'm sure we'll get into that soon, but he didn't win that job. He didn't win that backup job. Like, and so you're not feeling supremely confident. And then you kind of see this team rally around him, and the playmakers who you hope make plays made plays in this game. And that was like kind of my big takeaway from this one. Like, Josh Jacobs ran the football in all the ways we hoped we would see him run the football. Xavier McKinney got his interception. I thought the defense like stepped up a lot bigger than it did last week. The wide receivers, you know, were able to make the plays when they were asked to make the plays when he threw the ball to them. So just everyone kind of rallied around Malik in a really nice way. A team that's not really a vet team by most stretches of the imagination really acted like a vet team around a very, very green quarterback.
Yeah. A couple of things I want to react to there. One, I love your point where, you know, it didn't take Malik being Superman. Everyone just kind of did their 111th and really kind of elevated their game to allow for a victory in this game. I also want to react to your point about not winning the number one. The Titans are at minimum 1-1 if Malik Willis is their starting quarterback so far this year. They would have beat the Bears in week one if Malik Willis was their starting quarterback in week one. So for whatever that's worth, they probably still made the right decision long term. They had to go with Will Levis, but they have an extra win if he is their quarterback in Tennessee. I really feel strongly about that. Couple takeaways in this one. I love Matt LaFleur post game on Malik Willis, quote, "I don't think you guys can appreciate or even comprehend the task that Malik Willis, I mean, this guy got here 3 weeks ago, and for him to be able to go out there and command our offense, we had a lot of long calls. We had shifts, motions, a ton of different run schemes. There was a lot put on his plate, and for him to be able to go out there and do what he did today, I think that speaks volume of who he is as a person and the work that he's put in. Just super proud of him." And to your point, Grant, of the kind of the cool story and Perry, what was asked of Malik Willis, I thought he was superb on the field of what he was asked to do, but the stuff in the huddle, to Matt's point, the making sure that the play calls were right, there was no delay of games. They only had to take one timeout because a play call was maybe a little bit disjointed going in. The cadence was there. The, again, making sure everyone's aligned correctly, that all the motions were taking place at the right time, and then doing it with, I know, a watered down, maybe, you know, what they were asking him to do. It's not like they were asking him to huck it around the field 30 sometimes or whatever, but to basically be perfect on the day with what he was asked to do, 12 of 14, 122 yards, a touchdown, no picks, six carries, 41 yards, and zero mistakes. I mean, didn't even take chances. I love the fact of the, I know it's a funny sound clip of like, why didn't you throw the ball on that play? Well, because Josh Myers threw up on it right before the play. But even just to have the wherewithal of like, this ball has vomit on it, I am not taking any risk on this and throwing it, I'm just running it. It was just a zero risk sort of game. It was exactly what he needed to do. And just super impressive, again, for a guy who got here 3 weeks ago to be able to pull that off, from everyone involved, from play caller to player on the field. Just to your point, Grant, just an awesome story.
Well, and I don't think the most common fans, myself included, like, I don't think we can fully appreciate the logistics that lead from the end of the previous play to the call coming into the headset and then transferring that information into the huddle correctly.
Yep.
Like, Drake May in New England is probably not going to start unless they need him to, because like, that's what he's working on. Like, yep. When players come into the league, just the task of getting that verbiage and getting the playbook, and Drake May's a rookie, but Malik Willis just came here 3 weeks ago, and to be able to just administrate, right, just to get that information out there confidently and to command everyone to be in the right spot. There was no point, like, he never turned right when he was supposed to turn left. He never looked unsure of where the ball, and with all those motions and those counters, and, you know, I don't know if those are the right X's and O words.
But yeah, no, you're right.
That's really impressive. And I don't know, like a fan might say, well, they only asked him to throw a couple times. Yeah, but there's a lot more than that, right? That doesn't mean that just anyone can stand back there and hand the ball off, as easy as it might seem.
I just go back to what, you know, when Michael Pratt got here his first couple weeks, and we asked, you know, how's he doing with the playbook and everything? And Matt said, he's drinking water through a fire hose. He's like, it's a very difficult offense, and you can't just be expected to come in and in a few weeks just know the offense. It's like, and then, you know, now they have a guy that just came in a few weeks and has to know not the entire offense, I'm sure, but an extensive game plan and stuff that Matt said in the postgame presser they just put in this week. And a part of that is, of course, due to, you know, making sure that you have plays called that Malik Willis is comfortable with, that he can run effectively, and that he maybe knows a little bit, but like, still, like, that is a unbelievable ask of a new quarterback coming in. And again, to do it as flawlessly as he did, just unbelievable all the way around.
I think it's also easier said than done to like play a clean game, you know, going into this week, I was like, you know, I think if the Packers can just like play a clean game, like no turnovers, like they might have a fighting chance. But that really is easier said than done. Like, I can see how a guy like Malik Willis would want to come in and like play a little bit of hero ball, or if they ever at any point, which they didn't, which is incredible, get down or behind even one score, like try to take that shot. Or, but he really just took exactly what was in front of him. And like, to Grant's point, he heard the call, executed the call, did not try to go outside of what Matt LaFleur game planned for him at all. Like, really, like, to take the ego out of it and just like go with what was game planned for him, for the team, and like allow everyone around him to also do their job. It says a lot about like who he is as a teammate too. And now he's putting the Packers in a really great position to potentially go have a winning record if they continue to play this way while their starting quarterback is out, which is and could mean everything for them in the long run for this season.
Very, very much so. And I thought, again, even in the situations where he was asked to make decisions and throw the ball to, first of all, this guy has been a guy who has taken sacks at like every single time he's been in the game in preseason and regular season. He gets the ball, he takes sacks. And to not even take a sack in this game is impressive. The touchdown throw to Wicks, as was it Greg Olson that announced the game today? I only watched the quick recap of it. I was in the press box, but as he perfectly pointed out, I know, very hoity-toity. As he pointed out, that throw, if it's a yard on the inside, is at best picked, right? And maybe if it's even a little bit more inside, maybe returned for a touchdown the other way. That has to be pinpoint right on Dontavian, on a line, in rhythm. And then even still, Wicks does a great job of adjusting to it, getting his head turned at the last second. The ball's there, and he can take it upfield for the touchdown. The 50-50 ball to Romeo Doubs was perfectly placed. I mean, that's exactly where you want that ball in that situation so that Doubs can go and get it. And then there was one play, too, where he's going to throw like a little check down to Kraft on the outside, and he goes and it's not there. So he kind of like looks up and then comes right back to it. And he's just a couple yards over, but now there's actually a window to make the throw and for him to get upfield. It ends up being maybe a 5-6 yard play, but just little things like that, where he's not trying to do too much and he's taking what's there. And it just, when given the opportunity, he came up with the plays. And I said before the game, there's going to be a couple times where he's going to have to make a couple throws, and the throw to Doubs and specifically the throw to Wicks and those are the plays where he had the opportunity to make a play. He did. And quite frankly, those plays could ultimately be sort of the difference in this game.
I think it's hard to be perfect when you have limited opportunities, right? It's almost like a basketball player who comes in off the bench and hey, you have 4 minutes. Like, you don't have time to get a bunch of shots up to start feeling like you have a very small window to get it going. So to Malik Willis, right, knowing that you might have 4 big throws over the course of this game, but they all need to be perfect, right? That's really impressive. And I think that extends to the wide receivers too. Like, you might have 1 or 2 opportunities at a ball, and Wicks on that touchdown, and then the play on the boundary too, where he had to reach across him a little bit. Like, it's not like Wicks had 6 or 7 balls come his way today to get warmed up, or Doubs right on that jump play that he made over the corner coming back to the ball. Like, that was 1 or 2 of the targets that he got all day. So for everyone to be sharp and to kind of nail their opportunities, limited as they were, I think that's just a sign of a focused team. They had to be focused today.
To your point, Romeo Doubs had 3 targets today. He came up with 3 catches. Dontavian Wicks had 4 targets today. He came up with 3 catches and a touchdown. Tucker Kraft had 2 targets. He came up with 2 catches. Jaden Reed had 2 targets. He came up with 2 catches. Luke Musgrave had a target. He came up with a catch. Marshawn Lloyd had a target. He came up with a catch. And again, some of those easy little screen passes on a few of those still, but like, when these wide receivers, outside of Wicks having the one play along the sideline where kind of got his hands on it, but he was exposed and got drilled at the same time, don't really think I would probably call that a drop on the play. That's just a difficult bang, bang play. But outside of that, the receivers did everything they could given every opportunity that they had. And that's all you can ask, especially when you only get the receivers today had a total of 3, 6, 8 targets on the entire day. And they came up with 7 of the catches. So what more can you ask for?
Yeah, you can't.
Let's talk about this from a game plan standpoint, because you could tell coming into the postgame presser, Matt was very excited about getting a win in this one. As you said, Grant, a little exhale after to start the presser, but then you could tell the smile on his face ear to ear. This was a vintage Matt LaFleur performance. He came up with a win. I mean, there was one point where they had over 30 rushing attempts and only 5 passing attempts. They figured out a way to put Malik Willis in a position to succeed, this run game in a position to succeed, despite the fact that everyone in the building knew that they were going to run the football a ton, put the defense in a position to succeed. Obviously, that goes a lot to Jeff Hafley. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. But this was a game filled with complimentary football for the most part. And I thought one of Matt's best performances as a head coach. Perry, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on Matt's day today?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this, you and I, a little pre-show, but I just feel like Matt coaches his best football when his back is against the wall. And we've seen I can count to so many games. You and I were talking about the Raiders game a few seasons ago when Devontae had turf toe, but the game without Devontae when they went into Arizona and beat the undefeated Cardinals. I mean, there are so many games that you can point to that Matt has called a beautiful game. And I think it's when he has to like really look at his pieces and his playmakers and say, okay, this is what you are good at. And I'm going to look at my play call and my play sheet, and I'm going to figure out what you are best at. And that's all we're going to do today. And he really, and when it's your quarterback who you have to do that for, like today, it was just such a spotlight on that. Like it was pared back, yes, but it was still Matt. It was still like interesting run concepts. It wasn't just like run, run, run up the gut, right? He utilized everyone in the run game, all three backs and Jaden Reed and Bo Melton, right? They mixed it up. They kept the Colts on their toes and they couldn't stop them. You said it, Andy, everyone knew they were going to run it down their throat. And they had no answers for it. So Matt said, well, if it's going to keep working, I'm going to keep calling it. I'm going to put some throws in there when it's necessary. And like we gave our flowers to Malik already for completing those and the wide receivers as well. But he is a master class at figuring out, A, what his guys do well and continuing to put them in positions to succeed, but while also exploiting what the defense can't stop. And today was just a perfect example of it.
Grant?
I love the mention of the Arizona game, by the way, because that's such a good, you know, point of reference anytime a game like this happens, but also that's just one of my favorite Packer games, I think, in the Matt LaFleur era, that Thursday night game. The macro, and Andy, maybe you've had thoughts on this, or maybe this is something we'll talk about more. The macro game plan, kind of the week as a whole, we heard LaFleur talk about this in some players. I don't know how serious they thought to maybe Jordan Love having a chance, but I saw some comments and thoughts about how all week the game plan was the same. There wasn't like a Jordan Love versus Malik Willis game plan. And I think for a coach like Matt LaFleur, who can maybe be, I think, a little bit of an overthinker, at least from an outsider's perspective, Andy, you know a lot more. Like, I think maybe that Matt can get in his head. I thought that was such a brilliant way to approach the week. And I think it should probably continue to be his approach. The micro, the game plan, like in the actual game today, I was impressed that they created explosives in the first half, relative explosives, you know, 10 plus yard plays. They didn't have a bunch of 25 yard plus plays, but I think Fox, I wrote it down here, they had 9 plays over 10 yards in the first half. And the Fox graphic even pointed out that they had another 3 that were negated by penalties. So like his ability, not only to run the ball effectively and possess the ball and to do all those things, but to create big splash plays or big explosives, I thought was so crucial to them building a lead. And Andy Perry, I feel like he might have had 2 or 3 plays, something related with Christian Watson, that he just never needed to go to because they got out to that lead. And it's like, well, I kind of had this play I wanted to try with Watson maybe at some point to hit a home run, and he just never had to go to it. So to create those explosives without really, like, they had misdirection and motion and stuff, but they never tried anything that crazy. And I think he probably had a couple of those plays in his pocket.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, again, to generate the big plays, especially in the run game, which can be harder to do, I thought was impressive. And just the way that they kind of went about building this game plan. And to your point, Grant, I saw the same thing about, you know, it would have been the same game plan for Jordan. It makes sense, right? Like getting him maybe a little bit more in the pistol, getting this run game going more. If Jordan was going to play, it was probably going to be with limited mobility. Now, I don't think obviously we're going to see some of those running plays like Malik Willis had called for him. That certainly would not have been in the game plan. But outside of that, going with pistol, going with more motion and making the receivers do some of the stuff in the backfield and getting Josh Jacobs heavily involved against a run defense that looks super poor against Houston. Yeah, I totally buy that if this was going to be Jordan, probably 95% of the game plan was going to be the same. And you just switch out a couple of those quarterback run play calls and you feel very good about it. And you probably feel better about a couple passes and maybe some situations and maybe are a little bit more aggressive in some of those third down, you know, sort of play calls or maybe towards the end of the game. But I thought overall it made all the sense in the world to be able to attack it in that way. And Perry, did you have anything to add on there? Otherwise, I wanted to go in one. Okay, the one other direction I wanted to go in is I saw some people through the course of the day and even afterwards saying like Matt LaFleur wasn't aggressive enough in the second half and played to, I don't want to say maybe played to lose, but you know, gave the other team more opportunities because he, you know, didn't play to win in the second half. And to me, I think that's ridiculous. I think the way that he managed this game is the way that you manage this game in the situation that they were given. And far more often than not, especially with a lead in the second half, I said this in the live post-game show, the burden of making something happen, the burden of doing something great was on the Colts. The Packers had the lead. They had the time of possession. The Colts were tired. They were at home. They had everything in their favor. So by doing something aggressive or silly on offense, when you have a quarterback that it could have been something as simple as not having the timing with Josh Myers and you end up fumbling a snap. It could have been something as simple as he thought his wide receiver was going to run an 8 yard out, but the wide receiver ran a 10 yard out and that ends up in a pick because they weren't on the same page because he's been here for 3 weeks. Like, I had zero issue whatsoever with playing a very conservative approach throughout the course of the game, but especially end of the first half in a 2 minute sort of drill situation. And in the second half, when they had that lead, it was going to take something spectacular from the Colts with where they were late in that game to basically drive down, score a touchdown, and then either get an onside kick recovery and score again or stop them three and out and then get a Hail Mary. You make them be the ones that have to do something spectacular. Don't try to do it on your own. And I thought this was managed beautifully from Matt. And I had zero issue. Not only did I have zero issue, I would have done basically, you know, ounce for ounce, exactly what he did calling this game. I cannot believe we're already 2 weeks into the season, and after a bunch of crazy results from week two, including a big win from Green Bay, I'm already looking ahead to week three. And in week three, it is officially time to do some winning with Prize Picks. Right now, one Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right, only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss out on this opportunity. What I love about Prize Picks is that you can win 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. And Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. If your player leaves in the first half and doesn't return, your picks are still live. So obviously, I'll be going with Caleb Williams again, but I'm going with Christian Watson this week as well, who I anticipate will be much more involved in week three. Whoever you choose, the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. What are you waiting for? Get in the game with Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
I agree. I mean, they were clearly also dominating time of possession. So keep the ball, do what you're doing, drain the clock. Like, I think, especially nowadays in the NFL, like being seen as conservative is a negative thing. But when you are dealing with a backup quarterback who's, like you said, Andy, been with your team for 3 weeks, so far he's playing a clean game, everything is going well. I think it came to light mostly in the 2 minute drill before the end of the half, yeah. Right? You're like, oh, well, why not actually do a 2 minute drill? Like, why not go for, you know, 3 more points? Why though? Why potentially, you know, go up tempo and have there be a situation where there could be a mistake? There could be a turnover in that situation. You know, the Colts get the ball back in the second half, they could double up and all of a sudden you don't have a lead anymore. No, you're up 10-0. Run the ball, drain the clock, go into halftime with all the momentum that you have at the moment. And like you said, Andy, make the Colts beat you coming out. Like, there is no reason to, again, take the confidence away from Malik, make him try to play hero ball, it can spiral so fast in those situations. So I'm with you. I think, again, if you have Jordan there and you can call a few different things, or you have had the time to prepare for a 2-minute drill, you've done it, you've worked it, it's a different situation, but that's not where they were at.
I just think it seemed like personally he really wanted to limit Malik Willis's exposure to, like, I don't think Matt LaFleur wanted to put him in a spot where he would make a mistake or mess something up because he wasn't prepared or he hadn't been here. Like, just listening to the way that Matt LaFleur talked in the presser, it seemed personal. It seemed like he really wanted to work with Malik Willis and not ask too much of him. And I also think it's different, you know, if you're hosting Mahomes or Josh Allen or somebody and you're like, man, probably not supposed to win this game anyways. And if we need to make a 50-50 decision, being aggressive, like, I think at the end of the game, the decision to kick or to punt, I probably would have been fine with either one. Like, I think you have about as good of a chance to convert either way or to get a stop either way. He'd seen 3.5 quarters or almost 4 full quarters now of the Colts and Anthony Richardson. And it didn't really feel like they were about to bust loose. Like, maybe it would have felt with a different opponent. So I think just all of the information he'd gathered so far. And then also it seemed like he really wanted to personally protect Malik as much as possible. I think it makes sense why he decided the things that he did.
And just go back and think of this. If I would have told you the Packers would have had a 10-point lead at halftime, would you have signed up for that?
Yes.
Yeah. If I would have told you with four minutes and 10 seconds left in the fourth quarter that the Packers would have a 13-point lead with an opportunity to kick a field goal to go up 16, would you have taken that? 1,000,000% yes. If I could have told you even that the Colts would have the ball with a chance to win, but they have to go 95 yards in 42 seconds with no timeouts, would you have taken that? Unequivocally, yes. Like, you sign up going into that game for every single one of those situations going away. You don't even blink an eye. You're like, yep, I take that. I will take every single one of those situations. Those are the decisions he was making. It wasn't necessarily like, all right, if I do this, we maybe could have the opportunity to put this away here. It was, I'm going to take this opportunity that if I would have been given before the game, I would have taken 1,000,000 times out of 1,000,000. I'm not going to look a gift horse in the eye, no pun intended, playing the Colts, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to win this game. So that's what I think. And I think he did a masterful job of it. All right, let's go on to the, I want to just take one more thing on offense really quick, and then we'll move to the defensive side of the ball. 53 carries, 261 yards, predicated by an offensive line that vomited twice. Well, more than that, Josh Myers vomited on the field. Elton Jenkins vomited 3 times coming off the field. It was quite the day of vomit, but it all resulted in a win. It resulted in a big time physical effort from this offensive line. One of my other key takeaways at the beginning of this was, what did Matt learn from this? Because this is a Colts team, again, that knew they were going to run the football, that did not have, the Packers did not have a Jordan Love at quarterback. And they learned to me that they can line up 53 times and carry it for 261 yards when they need to. This is something that, as a play caller and as a coach, if you recognize, hey, I don't know that I knew that we really had this in our wheelhouse, that if we absolutely had to go and just win a game by running the football, we could do. Now imagine you have a game plan that is going to lean on a very similar running attack, but you have a quarterback that can actually be a threat to throw it down the field and convert those third downs, and you can be aggressive with. I think Matt learned something about this offense that maybe we didn't see last year. We never saw this last year. To a point, I know Aaron Jones had some big games. Aaron Jones had some big games because he was Aaron freaking Jones. It wasn't necessarily because the offensive line was just going out and blocking 53 times for 261 yards. This was as impressive as an O-line run blocking performance as I've seen in Green Bay in a while. I know it sputtered a little bit in the second half, but I think Matt really learned something from this, and I think it's going to be something that he's going to have in his wheelhouse kind of moving forward as a play caller.
If only we had an Aaron Jones 30-touch game, what would that have looked like?
I wonder what is the most carries he ever got in a game? I'll look that up. As you continue on about the offensive line or anything else you wanted to look at, but
no, I mean, I think we all have been waiting and have known that our offensive line had this potential, right? Everyone hears all the time that the Packers are so good at scouting offensive linemen, that Steno, et cetera, like, we always draft and develop the best offensive linemen, but it has looked a tad disjointed, and whether that's because they just haven't gotten there yet, or there's been a rotation, or there's probably a plethora of reasons, right? We haven't found the right, like, best five. But maybe this was the breakthrough game. It also could be, I want to maybe take a little bit of a grain of salt here, that, like, it's not like the Colts have, like, this world beater defensive front. You know, like they were trying to stack the box and yeah. couldn't stop anything. So like, I would love to see it up against some of the better defensive fronts as well. But, you know, I am a little upset that Jordan Morgan had to go out with an injury, because I would have loved to see him play more in this game and see how he stacked up with the rotation with Sean Ryan. But
yeah.
I think maybe it could just mean that Matt LaFleur has found his best five, and these guys are now playing together multiple games at this point. And so their cohesion and their comfort along the line with one another is finally there.
This is per Stat Muse, which I think is sometimes hit and miss, but I'm going to go with it anyway. Do you have an idea of what the most rushing attempts ever for Aaron Jones was? Do you have a guess?
I want to say 22.
Grant?
Is it only? I was going to say like 24, 25, but maybe 22 is closer to correct.
25 carries December 29th, 2019 at Detroit, 25 carries, 100 yards rushing. Also had six targets, two catches, 43 yards in that game. So
2019.
That's the one that they almost blew for the one seed.
I'd have to go and look.
If you don't know, like, I'm just trying to remember.
It was
I thought when you told Packers. Me, hey, this is the game that Aaron Jones had his most carries, I was like, oh, it must be a memorable one. And I'm like, I don't know.
23-20 Packers. The Packers went 13-3. The Lions went 3-12-1. So David Blau was the quarterback for the Lions in that game. So there you go. We got a David Blau mention, and we are doing great work here. All right, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. We'll just kind of do key takeaways, and then I'll kind of go over a couple things maybe as well. But Grant, I will start with you. Key takeaways on the defensive side of the ball.
So Xavier McKinney's really good. That's first and foremost. I was wanting to ask you two, because
yeah,
you know, I watched some of the highlights and I listened to Matt LaFleur, and like I consume just about everything except the all 22 that I possibly could today. And I'm trying to figure out, like, man, the results on defense were awesome, right? Like, how many punts did they force? And you know, they just made Anthony Richardson uncomfortable. Like, was that more of the Colts than it was of the Packers? I don't know. And I'm not trying to take away credit from the Packers. I think they had a good scheme, but it's not like the front four, you know, however many players are rushing on a given play. It's not like they were in the backfield constantly. I think they were more trying to contain. I don't know that there's a linebacker, an edge rusher, a D lineman that had a performance that just completely made the difference. Lucas Van Ness had a nice play in a run fit, and Devontae Wyatt had a nice stunt around the edge. That was really impressive, but it's not like one guy had a complete game wrecking performance. I'm just trying to figure out if the Packers did something specific with their scheme, with their plan, or if Indy just had a really bad day on offense. I'll take it either way, especially starting a backup quarterback. I don't care about style points until Jordan Love comes back. And even when he's back, I still might not care about style points. I'm trying to figure out why Indy had such a bad day, because I think they're more talented than that. And we saw that last week against Houston. They're capable of a lot more than that.
Go ahead, Barry.
I think it's a bit of both. I definitely think the front didn't get home because Anthony Richardson is really hard to bring down. I think with another quarterback, there would have been more sacks today. Like, Anthony Richardson is really mobile. I said this on Pax, which he said, but I think it bears repeating, because I feel really, the more I sit with it, the more confident I feel about it. But I feel like the Colts are similar to like early 2023 Packers, and that all the talent is there, and Anthony Richardson is like a prospect is there, right? He's just, they haven't put it all together. They have the receiving talent, they have the running talent, clearly. I mean, Jonathan Taylor still got over 100 yards on this Packers defense, like, and he's going, I mean, if you had told me that before the game, I would have said, yeah, I mean, sure, that doesn't surprise me. And I think Anthony Richardson has the arm and he has the leg. They just haven't fit it all together, right? You're watching and it's like, you know, someone runs a route just a little wrong, and so you get a miss behind, and there's some bad drops, and, you know, and it just reminded me so much of like the first like 5 or 6 weeks of the Packers in 2023. And you can see how when they put it all together, the Colts offense is going to be really, really good. They're just like not quite there yet. So a moderately good to very good defense is going to exploit that, right? So you're going to get the three takeaways on some bad throws, and you're going to get a sack, and you're going to force them to punt a handful of times. And luckily for the Packers, that meant, you know, keeping them to 10 points.
Yep.
But I think it's a mix of both. But I think when they put it all together, potentially like towards the end of the season, this is going to be a very high powered offense.
I think that could very well be right. And I definitely like the comparison there to last year's Packers team early in the year. I think there's a couple things. I think one, I think the Colts are going to regret not leaning more on Jonathan Taylor in this game. 18 rushes, 140 yards, 7.8 yard average for the Colts when they ran the ball. And that includes two Trey Sermon runs that went nowhere. So two runs for 0 yards for him. It would have been 16 for 140 by Richardson and Jonathan Taylor. I think if they have a better game plan like Green Bay had to come in and just run the football, I'd have been very interested to see what the Packers defense would have looked like. It never quite felt like the Colts got into a rhythm on offense or really had an exact idea of what they wanted to do. And I'm sure they saw some things on Packers, the Packers tape from week one that they're like, oh, we can exploit just like Philly exploited it. But I think they may have overthought it a little bit. And if they just would have said, Jonathan Taylor needs to be the focal point and we got to get him going early and often, I wonder how much different that would have looked. Because when they did run Taylor, they were extremely successful in doing so. But what I will say about Green Bay is I thought they went out and executed the game plan outside of the run defense, which you needed to be shored up a little bit, especially on Taylor, like we just talked about, keeping Anthony Richardson in the pocket, making him win with his arm, making things difficult. I saw a couple jams at the line of scrimmage that probably weren't shown on the TV copy. I saw them live and these corners were physical and aggressive. And I don't know, maybe that's why they went with Carrington Valentine a little bit more. We can talk about that maybe a little bit later as well. But overall, I thought they had a really good game plan and I thought they executed it. I know a lot of people are like, where was Rashawn Gary? Where was Preston Smith? Where were these edge rushers? Why aren't they getting... This was a contain Anthony Richardson in the pocket game. And I will not judge this pass rush yet on these two games because it was very evident that the goal was to keep the quarterbacks in the pocket for both of these games. So we will get a much better indicator against the Titans next week of where this pass rush is actually at. Let's not get too carried away with the Rashawn Gary's having a terrible year. Kenny, let's wait to see when we don't have these crazy mobile quarterbacks, you know, that we're watching. Just to see how much this pass rush does. I thought Eric Wilson played 8 snaps in this game, interception, forced fumble, and that beautiful play on 3rd and 1 to get a 3 to 4 yard loss on the play that resulted in them having to kick a field goal. Talk about being efficient for him. I will say, I thought Quay Walker had a tough one in this one. Drops the interception, got stiff armed into oblivion on the Jonathan Taylor run, ended up on the ground on another play. Just didn't make the impact that you were hoping to see. Hopefully he can bounce back, but I would say not a great start to the season for him overall, but interested to look at the all 22 with him. And overall, I thought this was a very good defensive performance.
That was my question going into today, Andy, was because they put Carrington Valentine in the second quarter and then he just never left. And I was wondering if it didn't seem like injury for Stokes because he was just chilling on the sideline with his helmet.
No, it was not. Yeah. He played the final drive.
Right.
Like, that was, so, like, it's still weird. Like, you start Stokes, he plays like, I want to say like most of the first quarter. And then you bring in Valentine, which you're thinking, oh, he's probably going to get that 9 to 10 snaps like he got last week. And then he plays the entire rest of the game until the game is on the line. And then Eric Stokes is back in. And it's like, I don't care what you end up doing and why the rotation is what it is. It's just usually there's like a rhyme or reason as to why you're, and it just, I don't know what the reasoning was. It just felt like vibes.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, like, I mean, do they feel like the matchup with Valentine and their receivers was better? And then at the end, it was just prevent defense. So
maybe.
Did they like Stoke speed against like potential deep crossers or something? Would they need big plays on that final drive? I don't know.
They were in dime on that final drive. So maybe it's been that Stokes has been practicing in the dime defense and Valentine has not. Maybe that's not packages that Valentine has specifically practiced. I don't know. It was just very weird of like, you're going to start one guy and have the final drive with that same guy, but like 90% of the middle of the game, you're going with a different guy. It's just such a weird concept to me. But yeah, either way, I think we can both, like all of us say, 10 points allowed. What, 3 interceptions, including Evan Williams, the game sealer, Eric Wilson, and then Xavier McKinney. Like, that's a fantastic, like, these are tough games to go out and put, you know, hold any team to 10 points in the NFL. I don't care who you're playing against, unless it's the Panthers, then 10 points is okay. But other than that, you feel very good about that performance.
I think the pursuit angles, the tackling in the flats, like, that seemed a lot surer this week than it did in week 1. And that's something that Matt LaFleur talked about multiple times this week. The field is also normal. So like, I won't use the turf as an excuse as to, you know, why the Packers lost in week one, because both teams were dealing with it. But I talked to so many people on my show and on Bill's show the last week, and they're like, I can't even do anything with that tape. Like, I can't evaluate anything because the turf was so bad. So to see them in the flats with opportunities to tackle guys before they got those yards after the catch that they were aiming to get, like, that was a good sign. I guess that's one other thing that the defense should probably get credit for.
Good call. All right, let's go lightning round through the rest. I just want to talk special teams really quick. The very first person that Matt LaFleur mentioned out of his mouth was not Malik Willis in this game. It was Daniel Whalen. Three punts, 139 yards, 46.3 yard average. Every single punt ended up inside the 20. Fantastic game for Daniel Whalen. Braden Narveson, 3 for 4 on field goals, 1 for 1 on extra points. So 80% overall, does miss the 45 yarder. Perry, just really quick thoughts on Whalen and Narveson, and where are you at from how you're feeling about the field goal kicking situation?
We have a punter. I don't know. What more could I want? Yeah, you know, like, look, we're not going to have someone who's 100%. And I feel like if his misses are 40 plus, I'll take it. I don't know. That's like kind of where I'm at with it. Like, he's not missing chip shots and he's not missing extra points. He's missing 45 pluses, and you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. Hoping he gets smoother as the season goes along. And, honestly, I'm hoping for less field goals and more touchdowns, quite frankly.
He's wearing number 44 because that's the max field goal he can make. And yeah. 45 or plus, then it's not going to be good. So 44 and on, he's literally
telling. Okay, well, then 44. I need him to change his number then to, yeah, like 65. It to like
number 99. There's number 99, and we are good to go. All right, I want to ask both of you this. Just anything stand out from these snap counts? So we'll just kind of go through some of the interesting ones here. Running back, Josh Jacobs, 47. Emmanuel Wilson, 13. Marshawn Lloyd, 10. Wide receiver, Dobbs, 55. Watson, 41. Jaden Reed, 39. Wicks, 36. Melton, 16. Tight end, Tucker Kraft, 56. Musgrave, 31. Ben Sims, 6. Offensive line, Sean Ryan at 50. Jordan Morgan at 20. Again, Morgan went out hurt. Otherwise, it probably would have been more. Defensive end, Rashawn Gary, 47. Enagbare, 32. Not to tip anything off with my vocal inflection. Preston Smith, 28. LVN, 19. Defensive line, Kenny Clark, 35. Devontae Wyatt, 25. Carl Brooks, 23. TJ Slayton, only 19. Linebacker, Quay had all 56. Then McDuffie with 50. Eric Wilson, only with 8. Edgerrin Cooper, only with 7. Valentine had 32 snaps. Stokes had 24. Javon Bullard had 42, and Evan Williams had 20. So obviously that's not all encompassing. A lot of the main players that you would expect to play a lot played a lot, but any key takeaways from any of the names that I just mentioned playing more or less than you would have expected? All right, guys, it's the best time of year. Football is back. We're talking NFL Sundays, college football Saturdays, and that glorious grind of fantasy football lineups. But listen, while you're over here making sure your fantasy team is dialed in, don't let your personal grooming become the guy that gets left on the bench. Let's be honest, nobody wants to fumble their grooming routine. But that's where Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0 Ultra comes in, acting as your all-in-one grooming playbook. From keeping things sharp below with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra to taking care of those rogue nose and ear hairs with the Weed Whacker 2.0, this is the lineup that'll keep you looking and feeling like a champ on and off the field. So join the over 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for kickoff by heading over to manscaped.com. Use the code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Trust me, you'll be drafting the real MVP of grooming this season. If you haven't tried the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra Groin and Body Hair Trimmer, this is the franchise player of your grooming roster. With precise trimming capabilities, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is built for performance. It's reliable, efficient, and gets the job done without fumbling. So what are you waiting for? Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. Stay on top of your grooming game and be ready for anything this season throws your way.
Well, definitely Enagbare. I mean, that's definitely where my mind, and you didn't lead me there at all with the inflection in your voice. It was hot. Like, it was really, really hot. So maybe they just backed off Preston Smith snaps a little bit, boosted up. I noticed last week, and I noticed again when you counted out the amount of snaps that Lucas Van Ness played, it's only 2 weeks. And I think the game plans have been built to contain these running quarterbacks. So we don't really have a great idea holistically of what this defense might look like over the course of the year. I kind of had high hopes for Lucas Van Ness this year and still do. So that's just something that I'm watching every week. The tight end snap count is interesting because it was way out of whack in Brazil. And I think most of that is because they just didn't have a lot of two tight end sets. But then Stanovich was asked about it this week and he's like, well, that's definitely something we want to fix, that we don't want that. It's like, well, if it was like 60-40, 60%, 40%, that's one thing. But it was like so, I think it was like 65 snaps to 15. It's like, that's not a rounding error. It's not like, whoops, right, we forgot to play Musgrave. Like, that was intentional. So Tucker Kraft's awesome. And he was huge today as a blocker and a couple big catches too. He's very capable at that. So I don't have any qualms with Musgrave's usage backed off a little bit. I will be interested to see as they go against more defenses and different looks, kind of how the one tight end or the two tight end sets are used differently, because I think that's going to make a huge difference for how much either of those guys play.
Perry, anything stand out to you at all?
It's the tight ends for me too. Grant kind of hit it on the head, but I mean, it's not so much that like Tucker being the clear tight end one to start the season is like a surprise. It's more just like how little Luke is being used. And it's hard to judge in this game since like Malik threw the ball 14 times. So like there's only so much ball to go around. It's just more something that I'm going to have an eye on. But I mean, Greg talked about it a good amount on the broadcast, just like how well-rounded Tucker is as a tight end and how integral he is in pretty much every single play. I mean, whether it's like in a run scheme and blocking on the edge, like literally everything they do, like Tucker is a part of it. So it's not that hard to see why he's playing so much, right? But at the same time, I don't think it's mutually exclusive as to why Luke isn't playing. And you imagine that the Packers offense is going to be heavy on the two tight end sets, which I would expect both of them to be out there. So just surprised.
For what it's worth, I think this is actually the perfect usage of these tight ends. I think Kraft at 56, Musgrave at 31, Ben Sims at about 6, I actually think is almost chef kiss perfect. That's almost exactly, I think, how I would like to see that played out. I think to me, Kraft is tight end one, and I don't think there's any question about it. We know that Matt values blocking so much from his receivers, from his tight ends, even from his running back. Like, it is going to be something that gets you on the field, and Kraft's just better at it. And I think Musgrave being used as a little bit more of a passing weapon, also, especially in a game like this where, you know, Musgrave's a pass weapon tight end. Like, that's what he is. And you're not doing a pass game in this one a ton. And like, yes, you can get him leaked out a little bit here and there. He can be a, you know, just a bit of a safety valve here and there. But when Jordan comes back, I could see this maybe being a little bit different. But especially right now, I think this is about exactly where I want this tight end group. I was a little bit surprised with TJ Slayton only with 19 snaps, especially with only 4 defensive tackles active. But nothing I didn't think was super shocking about this one. Really quick on injuries, Jordan Morgan, shoulder injury. He had a shoulder injury previously. We don't know if it's the same one. At least I have not seen that confirmed yet. And then Marshawn Lloyd, an ankle injury, his third different lower body injury so far. So hopefully nothing serious. We'll find out, I'm sure, more this week. Really quick look ahead to the Tennessee Titans. Grant, what are you looking forward to, Packers Titans?
Well, I feel good about the Packers' chances to win just because I think with Will Levis as quarterback, their offensive output is limited, right? If I thought the Titans could put up 35, and you know, it's the NFL, like they could, weird things could happen. But if we're looking at realistic possible outcomes, I think they'll be in this game and they'll have a chance to win just because I don't think the Titans can really put up that many points. So the Packers are going to be in a winnable game. That doesn't mean they'll win, but I think this will be within reach for them. That Titans front is nasty. It's really, really good. And I didn't get to see much of the Jets today. I had the Packers on one screen and the Vikings game on another. But that front is really, really nasty. So this Packers offensive line that I think took a step this week is going to probably have to take another one. And they might need to pass the ball a little bit more. I don't know. I think there's a little bit more meat on the passing bone for Malik Willis. I don't know that I want him like sling the ball all over the field. But if they were to mix in 5 or 6 more things in the passing game for him next week, I think he'd probably be good for it with another week of practice. That front just scares me. It really worries me because I think the Packers' line is good. I don't know that they're great. I don't know that they have superstars all over the place. And that Titans front is really underrated as far as position groups across the NFL. So that's my first thought on Tennessee.
Obviously, we'll see the Jordan Love injury status through the course of the week and see if there's any chance that he can go. If not, they're going to have to add a couple of wrinkles to that Malik Willis offense because the Titans will be well prepared. He can't just run the same offense a couple of weeks in a row and expect it to work. I'm not saying they shouldn't run a lot of it first and see if Tennessee is up to stopping it, because you never know, but you have to have a couple of wrinkles that are going to be a little bit different. And I'm sure Matt will have that ready if needed. Perry, last but not least, before we get to our final thoughts, interesting day in the league. Saints crushed the Cowboys. Bucks beat the Lions. Vikings beat the Niners. Browns beat Jacksonville. Raiders beat the Ravens. Cardinals completely outclassed the Rams. What was this day in the NFL, and what was most surprising to you?
What was most surprising? It's week two. It's a short and long season. The NFL is strange. are the Saints an offensive juggernaut, or are they just weird playing? Like, they put up 40 plus today. Good that the Lions lost. That's my first thought, is that the more the Packers can win, and the more that, I mean, the Bears are currently playing as we are recording. I don't even know what the score is at the moment. But the more that NFC North, oh, it's 3-3. What a barn burner. the more that they can lose while the Packers are winning with Jordan Love out is good. I think the Vikings will plateau as Sam Darnold starts to see ghosts. But also great that their winning, you know, came against an NFC opponent in the 49ers, right? Everyone's kind of taking themselves down, and Packers just have to stay the course. Definitely surprising to see how well the Cardinals have come out this season. You know, they really took it to the Bills last week and then demolished the Rams today. I did not think that they would be good this season. I thought they would be at the bottom of the NFC West. So just a bunch of surprising offenses so far this season, you know, everyone except the poor Panthers.
Yeah. Some teams on the Packers schedule that you maybe thought, hey, this could be an easier win. The Saints, you looked at the schedule and be like, hey, yeah, that might be one of these. They're 2-0. The Vikings, you're like, they're probably not going to maybe be good this year. And now they're 2-0. You got them twice.
The Cardinals, I thought would be an easy game.
And no, that may very well not be. So it's going to be interesting. This is the NFL. Like you said, both sides, I think this can change any week. It's only 2 weeks in. A lot of these games, I think, are probably a little bit deceitful and what is actually going to be the case maybe down the road, but some interesting results to say the least. All right. I think that probably does it for us. Awesome conversation today. Grant, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I don't think so. I just feel much more at peace today than I did last week, obviously, knowing we're not waiting on injury news for our quarterback, but also like week two is great. Week one's great. They're all great. But week one is, you either feel as good as possible or bad as possible about your team. And if another team won and yours didn't, you just feel like, well, we'll never be that team. And just to get one more week of sample, just to double the data and the sample size that we have, I just feel so much more peace about everything in the league. It's like, okay, we can hang with those teams and we're not as bad as those teams. So I don't know. I'm happy. And I thought the slate this afternoon was awesome. So it was a great weekend of football, but to just feel like we have some more data and more to go on this week is a very comforting feeling. And especially to get a win and to be back to 1-1.
Zen is a good way to go in week two. Perry, what about you? Final thoughts?
Yeah. 1-1 feels so much better than 0-2.
Yeah.
Because without Jordan, I feel like 0-2 can spiral you so hard, and 1-1 just feels so much better than the alternate. So I think this team, I watched the video of Matt in the locker room when he gives the game balls and he shouts everybody out. And I think the way this team, like, you know, Malik gave his little speech when he got his game ball. And I think they're going to ride this momentum into next week if he's the starter, which I think he will be. I think Jordan probably needs another week. And I do love a revenge game. I know that this is, you know, Grant obviously pointed out it's going to be a more difficult defense, but there's something to be said about the intangible emotional side of football. And this is a huge revenge game for Malik. And I think he's going to be riding the confidence of this win. So I'm excited. And I feel more confident about this team being able to win without Jordan after watching them.
Yeah, I totally agree. The statistics for making the playoffs after going 0-2 are not great, as most of us know by now. But Green Bay avoided that. They're 1-1, got things going in the right direction. And we'll see if they can keep that up going against Tennessee next week. You guys are the absolute best. It feels like the three of us have been conversing about the Packers for just about ever. That was as fun as we could possibly have, I think, talking about a game. Perry, tell us where we can find your amazing work.
Oh, just follow the podcast at Packs What She Said Podcast, Twitter. We're on YouTube. Follow us on Spotify if you feel so inclined, and just follow me on Twitter at Perry_Goldstein.
Grant, how about you?
If you want to listen to my show, it's live 4 to 6 every night, and probably just follow me on Twitter. I always tweet out the link in the stream, and you can find the podcast, the Wisco Sports Show, wherever you get your podcasts. So you don't have to listen live. You can listen after the fact too. But yeah, thanks, Annie. Thanks, Perry.
Yeah, you bet. Make sure to check out both of their podcasts. They're absolutely amazing. And yes, Perry does have a better rapport with Maggie Loney than the rest of us, but it's all right. We'll forgive her. Maggie's the absolute best as well. But make sure to follow both of them. They're amazing. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.